Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Monday, the 30th of March.
Coming up today, TV all-rounder and all-round good guy Gary Lineker joins us live.
I can't bear you two looking at me the way you're looking at me. So enough of this nonsense. I'm going to get dressed.
More success for Ulster. Brian Hughes follows Sir Anthony McCoy's footsteps as he's crowned champion jockey in the UK.
I try to not let myself believe that it could be possible, because as you know, in a jump jockey's life, one minute you could be riding on the crest of a wave and the next minute you could be in the back of an ambulance.
Plus, we're talking Olympics with Molly Scott, Premier League summer camps, and when Range Rovers go rogue.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much more before Codeline at 7 o'clock. Text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie and Ruby, how are we doing?
Good, Donica. You must be all excited about Codeline coming on at 7 o'clock.
You know me. I love a bit of Codeline. Some boy for a free concert.
Marie, what are you doing with your time? No sport. I mean, you must be up the walls. No guard. Middle of the season. Oh, my God. Could you imagine living with her, Donica?
Ruby, you're just sticking the knife in now and twisting it.
Poor old Billy's taking to digging a hole out the back garden. Marie, how's it going?
20 tonnes through the house over the weekend. I'm very impressed. But I have to say, in typical man fashion, you'd swear he was after building the pyramids. He's so happy with himself.
He should be. 20 tonnes by wheelbarrow.
Through the house.
Did the lads pitch in?
Nobody helped him.
Wow.
Yeah.
No one can help him.
No.
Who cleaned up after him?
Did it all himself. Everything.
Wow.
I didn't even brush up the stones at the end.
how does it look now? What has he done?
Well, he's moved. We can see the driveway again and the bits that spilled onto the footpath. And now they're all in the back garden. So they all have to be spread over the ground and then the Astro will go on top eventually.
Wow. Did you get a contractor or did you build your house yourself? Well, this is taking it to a whole new level, like building your own AstroTurf pitch.
I know, but it's good though. I think it's very therapeutic during this difficult time to be doing jobs.
Fair play to Billy. He's a man's man. You know what I mean? Actually, Ruby, you're like that as well. You're good at jobs, aren't you? DIY. You can fix things.
No, I'm good at breaking things.
like your body.
No, I swear to God, like, I have a lawnmower out there and I feel sorry for it. I'd say you can't wait to see the back of the coronavirus.
Well, you've just been constantly at the lawn.
I break everything. I swear to God.
I can imagine it looks.
It's an army tank I want, not a tractor.
Looks like Old Trafford out there, I bet.
No, I doubt it. Well, Donegal, what about your weekend? What did you miss with no sport this weekend?
Do you know what I didn't miss? The hour. Thank God we're back to normal. That hour drives me crazy.
Why?
I have a bee in my bonnet about the hour. I think this is the time it should always be. I think now there's a little bit more daylight in the evenings. I know it's the case for it, but just it drives me nuts that hour going back in the.
You've no animals outside the back door, or you never had to get up to do anything early in the morning.
But it's still
some crack in the middle of December now, and it's pitch dark at 9 o'clock in the morning.
But it's dark anyway, so just leave it the way it is.
No, see, that's just typical. Your whole life revolved around two training sessions, one that took an hour and a match that took an hour and a half. It's easy for you to say that.
He's fond of a nap as well, he's admitted that.
Oh, yeah,
a couple of naps and a bit of Murder She Wrote then as well. So what difference would it make to you whether it was bright or dark?
Genie, how did I know this hour would turn on me completely?
You brought it up, not
you
us.
You can have the hour, just spare me the bollocking.
Ruby, you must be going crackers though with no sport on as well. You're as big a fan as I am.
I am. I think it's more evident now than ever that what is sport to us all but a distraction. And it is a distraction. It's something to talk about, something to watch, something to give out about. And I do miss that. I mean, look, I miss plenty of sport, but the bits you'd see, everyone has an opinion on sport. So-and-so should have scored, or he played bad, or she was brilliant, or whatever it is. So we're short on things to talk about, short on things to watch. Sport is a great distraction. And even the amount of things that have come on, you know when they were coming on. Like, I mean, what's going to inspire the kids to play tennis this summer? It's not going to be a Wimbledon. You know, things like that. So, yeah, I do miss it. I miss it all, yeah.
What I'm struggling with a little bit as well is kind of that guilty feeling of missing it, but knowing that there's a bigger picture out there as well. And Tommy Conlon in the Sunday Independent, he captured it really, really well this weekend. There's just this line that really stuck with me, and I'm going to read it now because I think a lot of people will get a bit of solace from it. He said, "Most of us are living behind closed doors for now. When we can open them again and start drifting in crowds once more towards the towering floodlets of a ballpark, when the great communal gatherings of this sporting life start to reassemble, it is then that we will know for sure that the healing has begun." And I think he's right. Like, it'll symbolise so much more when we do get back out watching the sport that we loved or back out playing. It won't just be about the sport. It'll be about change and the fact that we are getting back to normal.
It's poetry, it is. Isn't it? Like, honestly, I think that's the bit I'm missing as well. I think sport, I agree, Ruby, it's a distraction, but it also brings us together like nothing else. You know, you just, I think it's, you know, a way for kind of communities and people to come and be around each other. You know, most things have fallen away, but going to a county final or a big match, there's still something beautiful about it.
There are, and these are different times and sad times, and at the weekend we did learn of the passing of Conor Connolly, the Roscommon footballer who won a county championship with them in 2001. He was in school in St Mel's in Longford, won all sorts of accolades, played for Craig, St Jude's and Ballycumber and Offaly, and our deepest sympathies go to his wife Claire and three children and his parents Jimmy and Nora. Very sad time and a very hard time at the moment with the coronavirus and people not being able to attend funerals and all that's going to go with it. So a very sad note to start our weekend to hear about the passing of Conor Connolly, and our deepest sympathies and thoughts are with his family.
That's for sure, Ruby. He's a Jude's man, my club in Dublin. Played with them for a while now. I didn't know him at all, but all the reports coming from the club and the people around it are that he was a fantastic person, an absolute warrior on the pitch. And then one of those people as well who gave it all back to the club, like got involved, helped in every way that he could, and leaves a young family behind. So sad.
Tragic. I'm not sure how we move on from that, but I'm afraid we'll have to.
It's difficult. But look, hopefully that they will be able to celebrate his life in some sort of way in the coming weeks, because I know there's a lot of people, you saw all the tributes online, who he touched and would only love to find a way to say goodbye to him.
Exactly. Well said, Marie. Moving on, guys. What about Jack Grealish at the weekend? I do believe we have Fergal Brennan to tell us, but I think it's a mountain out of a molehill. This is just shows you what little we have to talk about.
So an investigation has been launched after a picture surfaced online appearing to show Aston Villa captain Jack Grealish following an incident with the Range Rover. It was crashed into parked cars. And in the last few minutes, we've all been talking about it, but in the last few minutes, he has issued some sort of an apology. Let's hear it.
Hi, everybody. I just want to do a quick video message just to say how deeply embarrassed I am about what has happened this weekend. I know it's a tough time for everyone at the moment, been locked indoors for so long, and I obviously just got a call off a friend asking to go around to his, and I stupidly agreed to do so. I don't want anyone to make the same mistake that I did, so I obviously urge everyone to stay at home and follow the rules and the guidelines of what we've been asked to do. I know for a fact that I'll be doing that in the near future now, and obviously, like I said, I urge everyone to do the same. I hope everyone can accept my apology and we can move on from this, and hopefully, obviously, in the near future we can all be out enjoying ourselves again once this is all boiled over. So cheers, guys, and thank you.
Jack Grealish there issuing some sort of an explanation anyway to what happened. I actually don't really agree with Ruby, because I think that he should be showing a little bit more responsibility. He's the one that issued a video just over a day ago saying that people should stay at home and respect the guidelines, and then he goes and does something like that. We are joined now by sports journalist Fergal Brennan. Fergal, what's the reaction been to what's been going on with Jack Grealish?
Well, it's a difficult one to gauge. I think between yourself and Ruby there, that's kind of how fans are viewing it. One side are looking at the idea of there's bigger things going on in the world at the moment and we shouldn't be focusing on it. But as you say, he does have this position as a role model, as Aston Villa captain. He's a Premier League footballer. Huge amount of attention on him this season because of his performances on the pitch. And now we're talking about something that's happened off the pitch. His apology is a fairly stock one. Anyone that's watched the video or hasn't seen it yet, it's all pretty standard PR club talk of apologies and looking to promote a better message, etc. But I think from a fan perspective, there's so much going on. It has been a little bit lost in the white noise surrounding everything else that's going on at the minute. But I think many people will be looking at this and saying that he's really let himself down. This is the biggest point of Jack Grealish's career so far. The performance he's been putting in for Aston Villa, he could potentially be the man to keep them up. There's talk of him, for us, controversially being called up for the England squad for Euro 2021 or potentially for the Nations Games at the back end of this year. And I think from that point of view, he has let himself down. And just at this stage where everything seems to be moving in the right direction, he's received this really unnecessary sidetrack. And unfortunately, he has nobody else to blame. And in fairness to him, he's said that in the video. He said that he made the decision. It was a stupid error of judgment on his part. But it looks to be a bit of a road back for him now, because this is a very unnecessary thing for him to do at a time where priorities are obviously focused on much more serious matters. But given his position at the club, he does have a responsibility to be doing much better.
And Fergal, you mentioned that, the responsibility as the leader, as the role model, to do what you say. Like, you look at both videos, both times, you know, different views, telling people stay at home, and now you hear the latest one that Marie just played, and you wonder, is he genuine in any of his thoughts or his actions?
No, I would agree. I mean, you look at the two videos, that they're chalk and cheese in comparison to each other, but I don't think anybody needs that much of a reminder of how genuine or disingenuous Jack Grealish is when it comes to sticking to his word. But I think in this sort of a situation, again, he's just let himself down, because this is a situation whereby he's released that first video looking to send a public message to Aston Villa fans, and then he couldn't have done anything that goes against it more than getting himself involved in this very, very silly incident. I think obviously in a normal circumstance the club would be looking into this and there'd probably be an investigation. I think he's potentially saved by the fact that because the club is on lockdown due to the COVID-19 virus and there is, as I say, bigger fish to be fried at the moment, he might actually escape an internal punishment, because by the time the dust settles and the club gets back to some sense of normality, this could have kind of blown over and he might actually be saved by that. Dean Smith's got a bit of a decision to make now. Obviously, his mind is elsewhere and all the attention is going to be on when and if the Premier League comes back. But he has a bit of a decision to make. Does he make an example of his captain when things come back to normal and potentially risk the club being relegated because of this negativity surrounding his best player, Jack Grealish? Or does he let it lie, try and see the season out, potentially stay in the division and then look to address it?
Okay, Fergal, we're going to get Gary Lineker's thoughts on that very shortly. But before we let you go, Miguel Delaney last night had the story that a World Cup-style camp is one solution being considered by the Premier League clubs as a means to complete the season. What do you think, Fergal? Is this the most feasible option for them?
I think it's one of a big list. The UEFA president said yesterday that there's going to be another meeting on Wednesday, and that it could be end of May, early June or mid-June when the season comes back. I think this idea of camps being set up and neutral venues, logistically it's too much. I see the theory behind it, that potentially it's the best way to contain a possible increased spread of the virus. But I think practicality, logistics, it just doesn't really work. I think games will start to filter back behind closed doors. But this idea of removing players and coaches and everything, because it wouldn't just be them, it would be club staff that would have to be pulled away from their homes and potentially creating another health risk. I don't really see it catching on. I do think football will come back, but I think it's likely to be staggered behind closed doors and then a full return, probably not for another couple of months.
OK, Fergal, well, we hope that it comes back anyway at some stage. Fergal Brennan, sports journalist, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, next on the line is a man in self-isolation. He is, of course, a footballing legend, the voice of the BBC's Match of the Day, and he's also the face of Walker's Crisps. Gary Lineker, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank God. Gary, what did you make of Jack Grealish's behaviour at the weekend? Is it a Bismarck on his career, or is it something he can overcome?
He'll overcome it. It's just young. You've got to remember that football is about young men, and young men make mistakes. I've got four kids of my own in their 20s, they make the odd mistake too. So it's very easy to be judgmental, and obviously he's made a massive mistake. He's been stupid, there's no question about that. He has now apologised, which is the right step as far as he's concerned. And it was you know, having given out the message by the club about social distancing, then not to adhere to it yourself, is obviously playing daft. He's apologised, and it'll move on, and it'll get forgotten in these times of these very worrying times. So, but yeah, he's made a massive mistake, and I'm sure he's well aware of that now.
I'm sure he is. A massive mistake is right. The Premier League, Gary, there's talk of a World Cup style competition in the summer. Is that a feasible option?
It's hard to say in the summer. You've already considered the Olympics as gone, and that's kind of end of July, early August, wasn't it? Wimbledon, European Championships. The truth is, it's so fluid at the moment. The whole situation is going on, and nobody really knows what's going to happen. Everybody's got kind of theories as to what might happen. I suspect they'll do everything in their powers to finish the season in some way, shape or form. If that means delaying the next season, so be it. The players, of course, won't need probably any kind of rest between the two seasons, if that's the case, because they'd have had a long one during the summer. They've also got to fit in pre-season training, because obviously the players will be, relatively speaking, out of shape, because it does take a few weeks to get into any sort of shape in terms of having to play a proper football match. So there are all sorts of hurdles to overcome. So making predictions is a brave game at the moment for anyone. And I wish I had an answer. And I wish someone else had an answer. But at the minute, it's so clouded. Who knows?
And if the FA were to suspend it indefinitely, like La Liga, and push it into the summer or into the early autumn, could they axe a competition or two next year to fit everything in?
Well, they can do anything they want, can't they? They could even curtail next season to a degree. I think one of the reasons that they'll want to finish this season is, well, a couple of reasons. A, probably fairness to those that have already participated and who qualifies for the competition the following season. And also, I'd imagine the legalities of it. And, whether they'll come under any kind of pressure legally if they suddenly just abandon the season. So it's a bit of a minefield, and it largely depends about really when the virus sort of certainly lessens massively and the curve flattens massively, because until that happens, no one can even contemplate getting teams together. So what do you do? You know, you get your teams together and a couple of them get it, and then, well, how many have to get it before you can't play? And it's just a can of worms, really. And the truth is, whilst obviously football is massively important to a lot of people's lives, generally here we're dealing with life and death, which is obviously far more important. So football has to take a back seat. Like all other kinds of businesses around the world, it will suffer massively economically. My worry is, people always talk about the wealth in football, but yes, there's wealth in football at the top, but it's the teams lower down, in the ladder that you worry about. A lot of clubs, I think, will really struggle to come out of this. And it's those sides, really, that we should be worried about, not necessarily the completion of one or two of the major tournaments, which I'm sure will resolve itself at some point.
Gary, I completely agree. As a fan of sport, I'd love to see it back, but, health is the bigger picture. But at the same time, there is a part of me that would love to see it finished, and I'm sure there's a part of most Liverpool fans that would like to see it finished as well, and in ways it's kind of hard to make peace with that, because you want what's best for people, but at the same time you want your club to win a league.
Yeah, of course, and it is important to people, and understandably so. Nobody needs to feel guilty about admitting that it's important to them. It's fine, and if you were a Liverpool fan, you would be genuinely concerned at this point. They've not won it for 30 years. They're miles clear. They're a couple of games away from what was an absolute walk in the park in winning the league. Of course they'll be upset. And totally understandably so. But we're kind of left with no choice anyway. So, sport has just stopped across the planet at the moment. There's nothing going on. And I miss it. I miss covering it. I miss talking about it. And it's, life without sport, sitting at home on Sunday with nothing to watch is you know, it's boring, but we're not being asked to go out and fight a war here. We're not being sent away from the homes. We're being asked to stay in our homes, and sports people are being asked to stay in their homes, and that is a small price to pay in many ways. There are all sorts of things that will happen because of this virus in terms of sport and business and life and all sorts of things that dwarf it. But of course, we're allowed to miss sport. Of course we are.
Gary, you mentioned the sacrifices there, and you're right, they're small sacrifices we're being asked to make. But how are you coping? What are you doing? Are you an expert at Jenga, Connect Four? How are you filling the time now?
It's a bit Groundhog Day, I have to say. I mean, I self-isolated about 10 days ago because one of my sons developed some symptoms, that unusual symptoms in the sense that he completely lost the sense of taste and smell. Normally he just loses his sense. No more symptoms than that, and he's still got them now. His youngest son has now developed the same symptoms as that. It is part of symptoms of coronavirus, although it can be part of symptoms of ordinary flu or a bad cold. But they've never experienced that kind of thing in their lives before, so it seems a bit coincidental. But obviously you can't get tested at the moment. I think there's some antibody tests coming out very shortly that they're testing now, which they're having much greater numbers than the normal tests. So it'd be quite useful for kids like mine to know if they've had it, because then obviously they can go out and do lots of volunteer work. And so anyway, that's my son, my eldest son, George, who's like that. Obviously, then he's back in his place, but because he'd been here quite a bit, I had to take the old self-isolation rules to heart, and got 14 days home alone, which will obviously continue now because we're pretty much in lockdown, except at least I will perhaps be able to get out to the grocers and get myself a few ingredients to cook. So I've been spending my time pretty ordinary day, get it up. I've been in the gym every morning, although I'm lucky enough. I appreciate the fact I'm lucky I've got a little gym. But I managed to put my back out in there this morning, so that'll have to stop for a few days. Then I generally come upstairs, perhaps do a bit of social media, stick some music on. I've been reading a couple of books. I then cook, which is my new passion in life. And I've been putting a bit of stuff out on Instagram with my cooking. Not that I'm a particular expert, but just a few people did ask for it, and it gives me something to do. And watch plenty of telly and mostly the news, I suppose. And then it's next day, repeat and repeat and repeat.
Groundhog Day is a good way of putting it. But I did read one of your tweets where you've nominated Trent Alexander-Arnold as the best right back in the world.
Well, I just saw something this morning. They nominated, I think it was Carvajal, who's obviously a decent enough player at Real Madrid. Said, is he the best right back in the world? We're going to put out a few. And I went, no, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't think there's much question. Obviously, there's one or two others. You could say someone like Kimmich, but he's now moved into midfield predominantly for Bayern Munich. Obviously, there were one or two others in this country. You know, Wan-Bissaka and Kyle Walker, to name a couple. And Reece James looks like he's going to be really good as well. And plenty overseas, but what Trent Alexander, he's almost too good for it to be a fullback, really. His passing range is extraordinary. It's as good as anyone you'll ever see, with the odd exception, maybe someone like Messi or something, or Glenn Hoddle, but not, he's not far off. Extraordinary talent.
And we, as journalists, we're mad for stuff to talk about. We're speculating, we're analysing everything. And in fairness to Harry Kane last night, he did give everybody something to talk about when in his chat with Jamie Redknapp. He said that he might not stay with Spurs forever.
No, you're quite right. He did give us something to talk about. Understandably so. I think, he's been there most of his career. He's obviously Tottenham man through and through, but there comes a time where you have to make a decision. He's too good a player not to go throughout his career without winning stuff. I think in an ideal world, he'd love that to be with Tottenham. He's made that very clear. I'm not going to sit here and criticise someone who's thinking of doing stuff that I did myself. Whether it's to go abroad, but there'll be a lot of clubs coming for him if he ever does become available. We talked about this. We did a podcast with Alan Shearer and Ian Wright, that was originally a podcast, and now they're putting it out in the Match of the Day slot. We're a bit short of stuff. And we were talking about how long we think Harry Kane. We thought we'd probably give it another season. Who knows what another season means at the moment? Everything seems to come back to the coronavirus. But, you know, it's understandable. He's ambitious. He wants to win things. All players do. If he has to move on, he'll have to move on. And there'll be plenty of clubs wanting, that's for sure.
You nominated Leicester City as a club he should join. Was that more so as a fan or in Harry Kane's benefit?
It was a joke, really. Obviously, I don't think Harry Kane will move from Tottenham to Leicester. And we've got Jamie Vardy, but Jamie's, he's 33 now, 32, 33. But that was Tommy Cheek. Because obviously, if he's going to leave Tottenham, which is one of my former clubs, then I'd like it to be Leicester. But I think it's more likely to be one of the Manchester clubs who could afford him. Possibly Barcelona, as Suarez is, he's kind of getting to the twilight of his career. Benzema, who's no spring chicken anymore at Real Madrid. So there are, options available. And I think there'd be no shortage of people going for him, as long as he gets himself fully back, fit and flying again, obviously.
Gary, we've had a text in. It's a little bit off topic, but it is from one of our listeners for you. And the question is, what would you have done if you'd scored with your hand in 86 and not Maradona?
Well, I could have done, to be honest, with the one near the end. We were 2-1 down. I'd scored one. And then John Barnes, who'd made the first one, did another run down the left and crossed it. And I actually thought I was going to score. I was like 2 yards out. It's a free header and I headed it. And from somewhere, I think it was Alastair Cochea, their left back came up from underneath me and hit the back of his head and came out. If I'd have known he was there and I could have punched it in, I wouldn't have, though, because do you know why? Because it's not something that would cross my mind to ever do. It's never something that I did in my whole career. In South America and places, they have different kind of upbringing and a different thinking in terms of the game itself. For them, that's cleverness and getting away with something. Yeah. For us, that's cheating. So they view it differently to we do. It's not something I would have ever dreamt of doing. So it's kind of a hypothetical question.
Can you say different upbringing and different careers? You yourself, when you finished playing football, you moved into media, obviously, but you ended up at the forefront of the BBC. Did you ever, or could you have ever seen yourself at the London Olympics, sitting opposite Michael Johnson, discussing Usain Bolt?
Not really. But I certainly was interested in the media side of things, even, in my mid-20s. I remember the World Cups, I used to sit with journalists. And in those days, that thing sort of happened. And spent a bit of time watching how they wrote their intros. I spent time with the radio people, how they did the stuff. So, it's certainly into my football career that I started to think about the media. I never saw myself as a coach or as a manager, but I did like the media side of it. And I also thought to myself, if I can learn to present as someone that's played at the top level, no one else had really done that. I looked at other sports like Sue Barker in tennis, David Gower in golf, just to mention two off the top of my head, again, David Gower in cricket, and obviously what Peter Alice and people like that in golf. I just thought in football we didn't really have that. We had Bob Wilson, but he was a goalkeeper, so that doesn't count. And Jimmy, just joking. And Jimmy Hill obviously did some of it, but he was mainly a pundit. And I just thought if I could crack the presenting side of things, it might give me a niche, and it might give me longevity, which has proved to be the case. So, but I didn't really envisage me hosting, the main gig on the London Olympics. But, things broke for me. I was fortuitous. It was tough at the start. There were so many times I remember presenting Football Focus on the driving home, thinking I'm never going to be able to crack this. Then Des left in 1999, and they offered me the job, and I've been very lucky. Timing was always an important thing in my life. Timing your runs in all sorts of different ways.
And you presented the Olympics in 2012, but if you go from there to the World Cup in 14 and the Olympics back in 18, did you find it much different presenting the Olympics than the World Cup? Had you a preference for one over the other?
Well, the Olympics was a one-off. I did it a couple of times early in my career as a kind of just bit part presenter. But because it was London, they wanted me to do it. And it was fascinating. It was just an amazing 2 weeks. I still feel, after that, I made a decision and I left golf as well, off my own back, both things. And I just wanted to focus on football because that is my passion. That is what I'm most knowledgeable about. And so I thought I'd, as I'm often told to do on Twitter, stick to football. So in that sense, I did. It was brilliant to do at the time, and I'm very glad I did it. But for me, it's football now. I love it.
Gary, you mentioned it there, sticking to football and even timing your run, but it's like when we're chatting about the likes of Jack Grealish, it's having that moral compass you were on about to speak your mind, and you were well able to get off the fence on Brexit and other things like that. Do you think we're lacking that in modern sports people, that they don't have nearly worldly views, they don't speak up on areas they need to lend weight?
But when I was in my 20s, I lacked that too. And, you know, lots of people disagree with my views as well, which they're perfectly entitled to do. I have no problem at all with that. But you've got to remember that footballers and most sports people are very, very young men. Now, if we all think back to when we were very young men, we probably weren't. We didn't think like we did now. We didn't appreciate things like we did now. And we didn't speak out probably on things because we didn't have that strong of views and we made mistakes. And they're young men, they're like 19, 20, 21, and we expect so much of them. They are role models. They're not, you know, that's not why they play football. They don't play football to be role models or spokesmen or to speak out for the greater good. But actually, footballers and other sports, loads of all sportsmen right across the board, they do so much for local communities. It doesn't go reported. They do so much for good causes. Lots of them have done videos and for the NHS and about coronavirus and raising awareness. But then one player, one young man, makes a mistake and does something foolish. And the whole lot get, everyone says, well, you know, dopey sportsmen, why don't they do more? And it's something that's always irked me to a degree, because I don't think footballers, and in particular, because obviously that's the, you know, the thing that most people care about, or a lot of people care about, they don't really get a fair press most of the time.
I hear, hear. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Gary, thanks a million for taking the time to talk to us. Enjoy the rest of yourself. Isolation. I hope it's not too groundhoggish for you.
It's fine. I'll be okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Best of luck. Thank
so
you.
Much.
We're going to take a break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game on this Monday evening. I must say, I really agree with Gary Lineker there. I think we expect so much out of guys in their early, late teens, early 20s as role models, and everyone does make mistakes.
I think the important thing, though, as well, Ruby, is the clubs have an onus to protect guys. And I think when the likes, you know, when they're asking, Aston Villa are asking Jack Grealish to say this stuff, they got to know that, you know, it's hollow words from him and he doesn't mean it. So maybe ask someone that has a vested interest and really cares, you know, someone with a family member that maybe working within the hospitals, and that they can speak full-hearted about it. I know he's club captain, but sometimes I find that, especially in team sports, the guys are sent out to do stuff they know nothing about.
But lads, come on, he was just asked to stay inside and he couldn't do that. Like, this is a situation that is so grave, and if you can't grasp how serious it is, you'd want to really go and have a look at yourself. And I thought that his apology wasn't good enough. Whether he likes it or not, in this situation, when it is life and death, he is influencing people. And
I didn't really mean just Jack Grealish, Marie. I meant in general. But yes, Jack Grealish was wrong.
Jack Grealish,
I meant in general for other people making mistakes.
Gary Lineker, brilliant one. Like, isn't he, to be fair? Like,
different age. You see people as they get older and how their outlook on things changes and how they see things, and everyone makes mistakes. I didn't just mean Jack Grealish. I meant, I see where we hold sports people up as role models in all senses and probably expect too much from younger people.
Yeah. Marie, is he a role model there? Would you know anyone, maybe?
Are you talking about Gary Lineker now, or Jack Grealish? The thing about Gary Lineker is that you get so caught up in the fact that he now is a presenter that you almost forget that he was the top scorer at a 1986 World Cup. Like, his skill was phenomenal. Like, he was such a brilliant player. But introducing him, it's like, that's so long ago, it's kind of almost diminished a little bit.
That's the mothership, though, isn't it? Like, for players, for people leaving sport, I think, if you're known as the player, you know, that finished up maybe 30 years ago, you haven't pushed on. You haven't, you know, you've played with injuring yourself, I think. I don't know how you feel on it, Ruby, but I think...
I think he's probably achieved as much since he stopped playing soccer as he did playing soccer. Like, and you think he could front up an Olympics for the BBC... How high do you get as a sports presenter than that? Match of the day, World Cups, whatever it is. I think he's, and able to turn his hand and present. He's not a pundit, he's a presenter, which is a much different thing. And yeah, I think he's.
He's brilliant on the crisp sides as well, isn't he?
That's a gift too, Dunica. That's okay. A gift too.
Dunica, you haven't mentioned his hair yet. What?
He does have lovely hair.
Are you okay? There was a little bit of news today as well, guys, that we didn't get to at the top of the show. The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is the latest sporting event to be postponed because of the coronavirus. It was supposed to be on the 28th to the 31st of May at Mount Juliet. There is a possibility that it could be rescheduled later in the year, but as it stands now, it is postponed for the moment. Another one gone.
Look at Ruby, he's wrecked from him.
Yeah. I'm just wondering. I'm trying to think what's on in early June. What's going next? But look, that's just the way it's going to be, and we'll have to get used to it, as the fella says.
It's funny because I thought, you know, we'd get to a stage where we'd be running out of news, but there's news every day. It's like we had the Olympics resetting their date as well for the 23rd of July, 2021. We know that UEFA are going to meet on Wednesday to talk about the future of their competition. So every day it's bringing us new news, guys. We are going to be on this show forever. Positive.
Positive. Think positive, Marie.
So positive.
Oh, yeah.
Where's our next guest?
Our next guest. We're going to go for Brian Hughes, and my friend's our next guest. What's that?
Another one of your friends.
Brilliant. Your phone was brilliant this week, to be fair to you, Ruby. You are pulling it out of the bag, my man.
I'll keep you on air, don't worry. No, Brian Hughes has been crowned champion jockey in the UK for the first time, emulating, I suppose, his Ulster colleague and Sir Anthony McKay. Brian, how are you?
Hello, Ruby. Are you all right?
Congratulations. I wasn't talking to you since.
No, thank you very much. Yeah, it was a bit surreal. Didn't ever think that things, I guess, would be possible for someone like myself. But I suppose the only disappointing thing is that I'd like to see the season out to the end. So you would have got, but as you've just been talking about, there's other major events being cancelled and stuff like that. So it's probably just what we're expecting to do at the minute.
Brian, what do you mean by that? You never thought that something like that would happen to somebody like yourself?
Well, when you're growing up, watching the likes of Ruby Walsh, AP McKay, Richard Johnson, you know, them sort of jockeys, you look at them and they're the role models for people like myself coming through, and you just, you know, obviously I ride for big enough teams without riding for the biggest yards in the country, and I never really thought, you know, I'd be in a position where I could be champion jockey. Obviously, I always wanted to be champion jockey because it's the ultimate dream or accolade or whatever way you put it, but you just never really think that it's quite possible.
Brian, your career has grown and grown, and you've become a challenger to Dickie for the last couple of seasons. Like, you go back 5 years, it was 103 winners up to 144, 142, 146. I mean, you finished this year in 141, four or five weeks short of the end of the season. Every year has been better and better. And what do you think you can put that down to?
Trying to just, obviously, year on year, Ruby, as you know yourself, as a jockey, you always want to try and improve. And when you take stock of a season, how it's gone, what you could have done differently, how could I approach, you know, the next season better. And I suppose in the last couple of seasons, I felt that I was fitter and I've been preparing for the seasons better and trying to be more consistent and trying to make less mistakes day in, day out, and be as consistent as I could be. And I think this season, more than most, not for the number of winners, but I mean, every season, you look at statistics, the seconds were, for me, were too, there was too many of them, you know, and then obviously you're trying to think you can turn a second into a winner, and I mean, a lot less sort of play sources and more winners, so you're obviously trying to do things differently and try and be more the finished article, because, you know, I mean, when you're competing, even with likes of yourself or AP McCoy or Richard Johnson, you know, you've got to bring your A game every day. You know, you can't, because obviously, as you know yourself, probably coming through, you learnt more when you got beaten by the better jockeys of what you did wrong and what they did right. So you try and do more what they're, you know, do more of the positive stuff than making mistakes and letting winners get away.
Brian, you're from Armagh. You started as an apprentice with Kevin Prendergast on the Curragh before you decided to go jumping, or had to go jumping probably, and move to the UK. Who advised you where to go in England? You went to the north of England. Where did you get your advice from?
Well, obviously, from obviously being an apprentice on the flat, was introduced to the Orion family. Kevin Orion was my agent, and his brother Aidan and his father Bobby, they actually got me the job in Howard Johnson's, because they bought horses for him and that. And I suppose realistically, I was never going to be a flat jockey. Obviously, you watch the likes of Mick Kinnan, Pat Smullen, Johnny Murta, Declan McDonough in the weigh room, and you think, God, I'll have to be as good as them one day. But reality was, that was never going to be the case. I was getting too tall, and didn't quite have the ability to be a flat jockey. The Orion family have always been very good to me. They advised me and they got me the job in Howard's, and it sort of went from there, really. I've maintained good friends with them, and obviously they've helped me as much as anyone else, really.
And Brian, you're based in the north of England, and for a lot of our listeners that won't mean a whole pile, but there's less racing in the north of England. You're the first champion jockey to be based up there since John Joe O'Neill, so that makes it an even, I think, a bigger achievement.
Thanks, obviously, like, when I first started, there was a lot of bigger yards. Now, obviously, the north's obviously there's a lot less horses and a lot less race, and you probably wouldn't race every day of the week. And then you'd find yourself going south, which you'd be struggling to be as competitive. But I'm very lucky that I get the lion's share of the pick of the rides up in the north, which helps me ride a good number of winners. Obviously, there's more racing in the south, but then you could argue there's more bigger yards and it's quite competitive.
Brian, just on it, being named champion jockey, did you get to celebrate it? Like, there's always that lovely moment in Sandown where your colleagues and your teammates clap you out. Obviously, that mightn't be the case this year. How do you celebrate something like this?
One day we were, like, the week after Cheltenham, obviously one day we were racing, and the next day we were told that's it, just the rest of the season is suspended. So realistically, we've been in lockdown ever since. Obviously, a few of the trainers I've read out for they're not needing me at the minute, so obviously, haven't really been anywhere, so we haven't celebrated. I'd be quite a shy person, and I wouldn't be one for parties or anything like that. So, but I'm sure there'll be some sort of presentation in the near future, but I don't think it's not the most important item on the agenda. For the people who are organising the whole thing. So hopefully they can get racing back on sooner rather than later, and then I'm sure there'll be some sort of presentation then.
Well, Brian, thanks a million for taking the call. Congratulations again. And if I have one little bit of advice for you, have a party. I didn't have enough of them for being champion jockey. Congratulations. We're going to take a break.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It was announced that the Tokyo Olympics will take place between the 23rd of July and the 8th of August in 2021. And this has largely been welcomed by athletes and federations. We are now joined by rising athletic star Molly Scott. Molly, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. First of all, we have to give you a big happy birthday shout out. We understand you're 21 today.
Imagine not 21st, guys.
Oh, gosh.
I know. It's just,
Molly, it's just postponed. I know you have three more people attending.
I know, yeah. More people from the party, thank God.
We should have got you up on Zoom and had a big party here.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well. I don't really care, to be honest.
Well, Molly, we just mentioned that the Olympics are moving, and this means a lot for different people for many reasons. But for a young athlete like you, do you think that an extra year will prove beneficial for you, just in terms of kind of qualification and making that little bit of gains?
Yes, completely. To be honest, realistically, if it was this summer, I probably wouldn't have qualified because I hadn't been running fast enough. So with another year, I have a lot more time to train and work on the small things. And especially for qualification as well, I actually had time to qualify because if it was in July, it just would have been too short. And for sprinters and hurdlers, you know, you need to do like a lot of races to get the good times and to be fast. So for me, it definitely is it's huge. Like, I actually have a chance now, so it means a lot.
Molly, you sound like you're excited by the news, but have you set the plan to the new date already? Can you see how you get there now?
Yeah, definitely. Because over the past few weeks, it's been a bit weird training. You're kind of thinking, oh, what am I training for? Because we even had the inter-varsities cancelled, our collegiate nationals, and they were cancelled for the first time since I think, the 1940s. So it was very surreal. But now every day we have a thing to train for. And, you know, indoors, whether we have an outdoor season or not, we'll have indoors in January, February, and that will go towards qualifying for the Olympics. So it doesn't really matter how far away it is for me. I'm just going to train every single day.
Molly, God, I wish I had your enthusiasm. That's youth. But it is a really exciting time for Irish athletics. And we've seen over the last couple of years, the new generation coming through. We've seen your relay team do so well, light up the world stage. It must be really exciting to be part of that new era.
Yeah, it really is. Like, because we all kind of made a big breakthrough over the past couple of years, and everyone has been getting faster, and it's definitely becoming a lot more competitive. But, you know, especially now, if you wake up in the morning with even a tiny chance at making an Olympics, like, you know, you're probably one of the most privileged people in the world. So it is very exciting, and I'm lucky to be motivated by something.
Well, your seasonal best is 13:32 back in October, July, between July and October. How much do you have to knock off of that for an Olympics?
Well, the actual qualification standard is 12:84. So that's extremely fast. But the way the new system works is that if you get five very good times, so if you run two fast times indoors and then three fast times outdoors and combine them, they'll go towards your ranking. So then I think it's the top 55 that go. So I would have to run 13:3 five times, you know, to have a place.
Ruby's making a face here. He's thinking, I would never run that in a million years. No matter how long you got me out there for.
Molly, he wouldn't do that in a horse.
Yeah, true. Molly, we were chatting the other day about videos and people putting up their exercise videos online, and I was saying I'm sick of my pals doing it. I'm okay about athletes doing it because I know that they're going for something else. But for you, I know that you said that the haters can just go away, that let's keep the videos coming. From listening to you, I'm definitely going to watch your videos now. You're so motivational.
I actually haven't put up that many yet, but I was just thinking that, like, you know, so many people are stuck at home now that probably never were, you know, hardworking people. And, you know, whether it's an Olympic athlete or a normal person doing a workout, you know, everyone should just get out there and video and even have a laugh to yourself. You know, my mom and dad had a race in the garden today and it was the funniest thing ever. But, you know, we just try to change it up.
Sorry, Molly, who won, your mom or your dad?
Oh, my dad.
What was it? What kind of a race was this?
It just was like 40 metres up the garden and they were both wearing welly boots.
Please, you got to post this. This is
I actually do have a video of it. I will.
Oh, outstanding. We can't wait to see it. Molly, what are you doing to celebrate your birthday?
I haven't been doing much. I've just been hanging out at home with my family. I actually did a little hurdle session in my garden and that was the first time I've tried to hurdle on grass and I actually fell over twice, but I'm just going to have to get to a new surface. Used to a new surface because the tracks aren't open, so I have to stay going over them hurdles or I'll lose it, you know.
Find the most difficult surface you can, because you get back on a real track then it'll be easy. Molly, have a good birthday. Thanks so many for taking our call.
Thanks, Molly.
Bye.
Enjoy.
Fair play, Molly. Okay, don't go anywhere, because after 7, Codeline are up with another outstanding Irish performance here on 2FM. They're supporting the ISPCC and Owen McDermott will fill you in on all that. Stay safe, enjoy yourselves, and we're back here tomorrow at 6.
And do you know who we have tomorrow? I'm very excited about
Go
it.
On.
We have a former Clare hurler who just happened to win a couple of All-Irelands, Anthony Daly.
Oh.
And we thank you to Tori.
Yeah, another one of Ruby's friends.
There we go.
Yeah, I see a theme developing here.
I'm potholding John Hayes, but he won't reply.
Okay, get on it, Dunners.
Game on 2FM.